It's midnight, and you know what that means. Don't ya?
Welcome, citizens, to the What I Wish I Didn't Know show. My name is Corey McFadden, and I am your host. Today, I'm visiting a Renaissance festival. Actually, it's not a real Renaissance festival, it's just a craft fair. But there are entertainers there that actually work at the Iowa Renaissance Festival. And since I was in the area, I thought, hey, why not? So, as far as I can see, there's a play going on. There's some guy with a bunch of little kids and plastic drums. And there's some people over there with real swords sword fighting each other. Let's talk to him, shall we?
Some other people were marched out in front of the judge.
Androcles,
penalty for runaway servants?
No.
Death by chewing.
Death by chewing?
Yes, death by chewing. You will be thrown into the arena with several hungry lions. Guards, take him away. Well, that very afternoon, with all the people of the city gathered in the stadium, Androcles and the other prisoners were marched into the arena before all the people, and even the king of the city. And on the other end of the arena, a big iron gate was hauled up. And out jumped three of the hungriest lions Androcles had ever seen.
Oh, no, I'm thankful now, but...
But there, at the head of the lions, was Androcles' old friend, the lion from the cave.
My old friend, the lion from the cave.
Pa, I thought I'd never see you again. You know, when I went out to get dinner, these guys grabbed me and put me in this smelly old cage, and they brought me here. But don't worry, friend. I won't let any of these lions hurt you. Back off. This is my friend. Now, when the king saw that none of the lions were willing to harm one hair of Androcles' head, he gave Androcles his freedom that very day. And so the moral of this tale is, a friend in need is a friend indeed. The end.
McFarlane Livesteel, how'd you come up with the name?
Well, actually, our real name is McFarland, which is the Americanized version of McFarlane, which is just a wee bit off from the Gaelic version, the Scottish version, which is MacFarlane, spelled MacPharlain, and so we went with something just a wee bit in between.
The concept for Livesteel.
Livesteel is a type of stage combat that's used in the Renaissance world, or the Renaissance fairs, per se, that is generally choreographed. Sometimes it's not, and those tend to be a wee bit more bloody, and unfortunately people get hurt far too often that way.
Are you guys choreographed?
Aye.
How much do you practice?
We practice at least three times a week.
Three times a week?
Aye.
How many shows do you do?
Right now we've done about 9 shows this year.
This year?
Aye, this year. Next year we're going for 12 shows. So we'll be busy almost all summer long.
There are that many Renaissance festivals?
Aye, there's a lot of Renaissance festivals. They start in Oklahoma, at Norman, Oklahoma in April, and then they just go crazy from there all the way through the year. We get a wee bit of a break between I believe it's the end of July and the beginning of August, and then it starts all over again.
During the winter too?
You can go if we had the motivation, we could actually go down to Louisiana and to Florida and do that also.
So how did you guys start?
We started because of my brother, the Dark Knight. He started this about 6 years ago doing it, and drew us into it, my wife and I. And we've just gone uphill ever since. We started out as guards for another group, for their king, and then just broke off on our own and started to do our own thing.
You guys write your own story?
Aye. The story is ours.
Could you... Now, I missed the first show.
Okay.
And I missed the second show, most of it.
All right.
Could you recap the story for me?
Recap the story. The story is, it starts out that a long time ago, England is trying to take over Scotland once again, you see. And England, the English, they tend to be a wee bit, how do I say it, they're not very nice. They're very sneaky, let's see. And so what's happened...
English.
Aye, exactly. So what's happened is that they've written a new law proclaiming that any clan's lands that has no male heir left, it's then forfeit to the English sovereignty. And so what happens is that Robert McFarland, who would be my brother and I's father, he knows their treachery, and so what he does is he sends the wee one, Aaron, off with the Knights of the Golden Dragon on a quest so that he can save his life in case the English try to kill him so that he doesn't have any other male heirs. And so what's happened is during that time, the Golden Dragons are off on this quest to find a land that was rumored of only by the Vikings of old. And we all know that the first people to discover America were Vikings. So that's kind of the backstory to that. Now, as time goes on, of course, the Dark Knight, who is Sir Ian McFarland, he learns from all sorts of different types of cultures. He learns the fighting styles of the Indians, and he learns the fighting styles of the Mongols and of the Chinese and the Japanese, because that's the way they traveled to find this new world. In the end, though, they're attacked by barbarians from the Far East. And presumably, we think it's probably the Mongols, because they were considered barbarous at that time. And everyone was killed but Sir Aaron. He narrowly escapes death, and he was knighted with our uncle's sword and his dying breath. And then he makes his way back home, knowing only that it lies in Scotland. He knows nothing else about his history. And that's where the story starts, is from there, when he makes it back to whatever fair we might be in. And we have a slight confrontation during an educational show, which myself and the Lady Anathy, who is my wife, are doing. And it just escalates from there.
How long have you been doing this?
We've been doing it now for 6 years. Aaron says, well, I don't know if I can do a backflip or not. So they taught us how to do it right. And it started out by me getting down on my knee and putting my arm out. And Aaron was supposed to fall backwards over my arm. And so he did this a number of times, and about the fourth time he got it perfect. So from then on out, we were doing a leg lift, and he was launching himself. So it worked out quite well.
This jousting team you were with?
Noble Cause. Grand people. Our first show, of course, will be in Norman, Oklahoma. Then we'll go to Muskogee, Oklahoma. And then we'll go to St. Louis, Missouri for 3 weeks. And then straight on into, I believe, Sedalia, Council Bluffs, Osceola, and then we have a break. If you get a chance to come all those places, you'll really enjoy yourself.
You guys have a schedule posted somewhere?
No, I don't, but I'm working on a website right now. So we'll get it set up for you.
Ladies and gentlemen! Show. I kicked his butt. And the second show. He kicked mine. This is now the third and final challenge. This mysterious knight is more than he seems, obviously. And now I'm going to give him a chance at redemption. Are you ready, knight? Then prepare yourself. This is not possible! You've all heard the stories. You know that all the Golden Dragons were killed. They were murdered. You, sir, are an imposter. And you will be ratted out as the rat that you are. Now, prepare yourself, Dark One. Ah! I yield as you do.
I yield.
I do also. The knight! Where is it that you've learned to fight so?
Why, my uncle? And the warriors that we encountered.
They only knew him as Uncle Argyle. Argyle. First knight of the Golden Dragon, Argyle.
Hey.
Not an Uncle Argyle. Imagine that, a Scotsman with an Uncle Argyle. One person. You're the boy from the legend. You're the boy that was sent with me tonight. Sir, do you know who that boy was? That boy was my brother, Aaron McFarlane. You're my brother! My brother, Sir Aaron McFarlane! I found him at last! Welcome back, brother. Well, that ends the exciting part of the show.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. Actually, this
now
is
we get to sword fight with the little one.
Yeah.
You're too eager. This is the best part of the show. This is the part of the show where we teach young girls how to pound sticks back into the ground. No, this is the part of the show where the children get to learn lessons. The first of those lessons, I'm going to allow the Dark Knight to tell.
How many of you kids out there thought I was a bad guy?
Be honest.
Raise your
parents,
hands.
Parents,
how many thought I was a bad guy? Be honest.
Shame on you!
This is what we do. This is my favorite saying in the world. Don't ever judge a book by its cover. There he goes.
Now, the second lesson, I will allow the Lady Anathe.
How many of you saw me sword fight with the Duncan into the second show? Very good. During this time, ladies were not necessarily anything but property, and were not necessarily known to be able to take care of themselves. But what my character would like to teach the young ladies of your day and time, not mine necessarily, that ladies always need to be prepared, and there should be no such thing as a damsel in distress. We can take care of ourselves, as is evident with my sword fight with Duncan.
She's right again. Now, the last and final moral that I'd like for you all to learn. Because you've noticed how the Dark Knight and I treat each other with respect and kindness. That's called chivalry. The true meaning of chivalry is chevalia, which means horseman. But at a more basic form, chivalry is nothing more and nothing less than honor and respect. That is, honor and respect for your mom, your dad, your brothers and your sisters, for the wonderful teachers who come to school every day to impart to you their knowledge. And in light of what's happened in recent times, I think honor and respect is the most important lesson we can learn now.
What's your name?
Gregory Schmidt.
Schmidt, I understand you're the organizer of the entertainment here today?
I run a company called Festivals International. We coordinate hundreds of performers for 50, 60 different events around the Midwest. We even used to go into Texas, Indiana with some of our events. But we focus on the upper Midwest.
You got a website you want to plug?
Yes, www.festint, that's the abbreviation for Festivals International, festint.com.
Cool. How'd you guys get started?
Mostly, I suppose, from theater, and then these big theatrical productions grew into, like, concerts and pageants. And then we started looking at the burgeoning Renaissance festival business. We thought, well, you know what? If we took all of our performers and put them into one festival, we'd have, like, a big Renaissance festival. So we went and looked at a few of the big Renaissance festivals as a standard, and we just started doing them. We figured we better coin the phrase the Iowa Renaissance Festival before anybody else does. So we've been running that for 10 years now. We just celebrated our 10th year at our third location, the Amana Colonies, and we'll stay there because that's a real good place for it. But we're also involved in lots of other people's festivals, and we do everything from mall strolls, Christmas strolls. We have all the characters and costumes, and we're consultants for communities and organizations, even inventing an event from scratch.
How many a year do you do?
I would guess we're involved in about 5 Renaissance festivals, 10 summer arts festivals, and then all the others together, like the holiday events and stuff, probably another 30. So just about every weekend, we have someone representing Festivals International out there doing anything as basic and simple as clowning and juggling to something elaborate to these living history encampment groups that you saw here today at Wartburg College. And they get even more elaborate than that. We like working with, out of Minneapolis, is the Clan Tartan. We're talking 80 people in 10 tents, and they do 10 different activities at our big special events from the 1620s.
1620s?
The living history. It's Colonel, the Clan Tartan specifically, is Colonel McGaffney's military regiment of the 1620s. So it's a whole husband, wife, child, living history encampment group. Right down to the food they cook is authentic. We almost got involved in a location that would have been a year-round Renaissance medieval experience, but you know, that didn't fly, and it's just too difficult to get something like that running.
Would there be enough call for that?
Well, I think that's why it's not happening. It's actually being attempted right now. It's called Wybrecht Village. It's down in near southeast Iowa, not far from the Fort Madison area.
And what would that be? Like the Renaissance version of Living History Farms?
Yes, exactly.
People live and work like they did then?
Like if you were to go to Williamsburg Village in Virginia, full-blown reenactment, role-playing, all the particulars are there for that kind of lifestyle. So there are some people in Iowa actually trying to get that going. Kind of like Living History Farms, only go back 300 years.
Yeah. So 10 years ago.
Yeah.
10 years ago, you're sitting around and the light bulb comes on. Mm-hmm. What gave you the idea in the first place?
I think our mutual infatuation with the Renaissance aura, that's everything from the Robin Hood era, and Hollywood and television, films and television helped make these things popular. But everything from the Robin Hood era to, let's say, the Three Musketeers era. So all that stuff in between. And then when you come out with these new Celtic movies, like A Braveheart, you know, that just keeps, you know, adding fuel to the fire of interest, you know. And now schools are starting to do their own Renaissance fairs with their Excel and Tag programs, because that's the period when the humanities really came to life, when the church, as it was, the old world church, kind of lost its grip on the life and the habits of the common people, where they started thinking for themselves, inventing for themselves, learning to read. They could read the Bible, they could read other things for themselves. And that's when your Michelangelos and your Da Vinci's came along. And it was the Italian experience that kicked off the Renaissance, a whole history through their inventions, through their artwork. And basically a lot of that was just commonly started from money, from these hugely successful fabrics companies that got the whole clothing and fabric industry moving. And that's what made the Da Vinci, the Medici so rich, was was commerce through fabric and clothing and trade. And then they took their money and invested it in the arts and the humanities, and thus theater blossomed. And all the art forms that come out of the Renaissance period are phenomenal. Opera started then, ballet started then, Shakespearean theater is just bizarre.
Are you saying the Renaissance period was started by fabric companies that were...
The financing of the patronage of the Renaissance arts was from these big, wealthy Italian families like the de' Medicis. There were several others who instead of aspiring to the arts and the humanities, they aspired to the Vatican. And their sons became cardinals and popes. And so this movement of competitive families to build the biggest estate, to have the most fabulous library collection, collecting the salvaging of the original Greek and Roman libraries was a big hobby of these wealthy people in central Italy, the Florence area. And they would go to Rome, Greece, and bring back these, they would learn Greek and Latin, so they could read their own books. And so academia just blossomed, universities, the Central European universities blossomed from the same movement. In a way, it was spiritual and altruistic, but in another fashion, it was very much based on ego and pride, you know, national pride, family pride. Let's have the best art collection in the, you know, in the realm. Let's have the best chain of stores and silk shops in the realm. And so a lot of it was just based on pure commerce.
Okay. So, now we come to today. We're in Iowa. Why? Let's see. You tour all over the country, or you
we do basically the center part of the country from Texas to Minnesota.
Texas to Minnesota. Like in a, do you have the same schedule every year?
Basically, the big events that we go to are the same ones, same schedule every year. Every once in a while, a small event will pop up that we do just as a one-timer. About once a year, we get a new event. We usually add something new each year. And I think the way it's sustained and maintained in people's minds is it's a cross between just wanting to get out and play, the same way you would on Halloween. You want to get in costume, you want to get out and play. But when you add that educational academic aspect of it, where you can see the origins of where certain art forms and certain musical activities came from, it becomes all the more intriguing for kids, students, parents. We get a lot of parents that as followers because they want their kids to experience what we're doing here. And I especially enjoy these living history encampment groups, everything from SCA, which is a society for chronological, wait a minute, let's start over.
That's okay, I can edit this.
Okay. SCA, which is the Society for Creative Anachronisms, which is basically a competitive point-keeping combat kind of experience, which blossomed into...
I've been to something like that in Wisconsin.
Okay. And they use not so much armor as padding and rattan swords, bamboo weapons, but they blossomed into becoming students of history themselves. They will explore food ways, music ways, clothing making, weapon making, tool making. But besides them, there are now blossoming all over the United States, like the Clan Tartan that we mentioned up in Minneapolis, who don't do the competitive combat, but come together as a group, like an explorer scout post would, and they become really comprehensive and proficient about knowing that specific thing they're interested in, whether it's Celtic history of the 1620s, we have another group out of Nebraska that does Viking history out of the 1200s.
So this is going on in all the different genres.
Right. You read Renaissance magazine. By the way, the industry has its own magazine now, a really nice, glossy, quarterly magazine called Renaissance Magazine that goes around the country.
Is it mostly fuss advertisements, or are there real articles?
Real articles about the history and origins of artifacts and you know, elements of history.
It's pretty cool.
And only in the tail end in the glossary do they list, you know, the catalog of events around the country in the calendar. But it explores these people, these groups, these study groups that really get into medieval and Renaissance histories.
I'd like to know about the first event that you did independently.
That would have been the original number one Iowa Renaissance Festival in 1992. up at the North Iowa Fairgrounds in Mason City. It was hugely successful. We drew people from as far away as 100 miles away. So we thought, well, we better go to the state fairgrounds if we're going to be the Iowa Renaissance Festival. So we moved to the state fairgrounds in Des Moines, tried that for 7-8 years. Found that the Des Moines clientele really wasn't prone to coming to the state fairgrounds after the state fair was over. So we needed a new, fresher location. And finding the number one tourist attraction in Iowa, which is also a history reenactment county, the Amana Colonies, we thought this is ideal. Let's move to the Amana Colonies. And we've been there 2 years now. We love it. We're going to stay there. But before that, I was involved in theater productions. Obviously, theater productions that dealt with Shakespeare or Renaissance history or medieval history were the ones that were more interesting to me. And the very first play that I got to student direct at a little college, like Wartburg College here, over in Indiana, St. Francis College, was the Exit the King, which was had a medieval setting to it, which was a Eugene Ionesco play about a dying king. And so at my very, I was in my early 20s then, I was doing my first semi-professional theater production on a college campus. It wasn't really a student production. We're already looking for medieval costumes, king's outfits and stuff. So from that experience 30 years ago to these experiences now, we're still dragging out the Renaissance costumes, the medieval outfits, playing with Shakespeare, those times. And we also specialize in medieval and Renaissance banquets, king's banquets, father Christmas banquets that we do on the holidays. We have a huge one planned for Thanksgiving weekend up at this new Music Man Square. It's a museum dedicated to Meredith Willson, the Music Man.
Yep.
And they have a big banquet space there, and so we're doing one of our big renditions of our Victorian madrigal banquets there at the tail end of November.
How does that work? Do you throw these big banquets? Do people like come and watch?
Yeah, the patrons.
People come watch people in costume.
Right. They're going to be sat at tables. They're welcome to come in costume also. But it's basically like taking a small-scale Renaissance festival indoors and playing it around people dining. And we can fit as many as 300 people in a setting. And we'll, in some occasions, we'll do a series of them, like over a weekend, like 3 and 4 shows on a weekend. And we're hired out to do those kinds of things by companies that want to entertain their employees, like at their annual company party. We're brought in to put on a big banquet for them.
Better than just another comedian standing there.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's like a comedian and 25 other performers, besides.
So tell me about the drum thing.
The drum jam comes from...
Drum jam, that's what you call it?
I call it the acronym DRUM, which stands for Drum Revelry for Understanding Merriment. And if you take it into the corporate setting, it's for Understanding Management. So it's... and it's still in its early stages. It's probably only the 8th time we've done it. When I was working in street ministry, working in Washington, D.C., there was a group of, pardon the expression, ghetto kids who had these plastic pails, and they had what they called a junkyard band.
And they back in the era of the Mountain Dew commercial, and the kid got the contract? Was that?
Before that. This
before
was,
that,
this
okay.
would have been 1979, 1980. These kids were in Washington, D.C., beating on the drums, and that's when I was there. I'd see them on the street corners. So I hired them to do a concert for me in a big church basement hall once, and so I remembered that, but only about a year ago I was at the big Festival of Nations up in St. Paul. They brought in a drum jam, a professional one from Chicago. Fabulous. 60 instruments, 60 chairs. They did the show every 45 minutes. We'd sit down, 60, 70 people. And
on plastic drums?
On all kinds of...
Just whatever?
Real and student instruments. And they would get a sound rolling that would just take over this event. And so when I contacted them to see if they wanted to do one of my subsequent events, found out that their price was hugely expensive to bring them out of Chicago. I thought, well, I'll just start my own. I'm creative enough to get one going on my own. And that's where it came from.
Well, thanks for talking to
me. Oh, you're welcome.
This is a really neat thing you're doing.
Oh, super. So if you're ever seeing Uncle Blue Shoes, he's the drum jam captain at some of the summer arts festivals. It's not always the Renaissance man.
Uncle Blue Shoes?
Uncle Blue Shoes. That's my persona when I'm doing game shows.
Oh, okay.
And we're doing a creative workshop up in Mason City at the same museum, the Music Man Square, called Saturday's Child. And the director, designer of all the activities, everything from a drum jam to designing your own rap poetry, and doing your own graphic artworks. The host and designer of that show, that series of things for students, is called Uncle Blue Shoes, and that's my other persona.
All right.
We'll see you at the next event.
This mysterious knight is more than he seems.
I could take that out and it would feel much better.
You will be ratted out as the rat that you are! You will be ratted out as the rat that you are! Mysterious knight is more than he seems.
I could take it out and it would feel much better. I could take that out and it would feel much better.
Promise to be gentle?
Well, what have we learned here today? Renaissance Festival. It looks like I get in for free now. They're a real sword fans. And they really pet each other. Kind of groovy when you think about it, huh? Sometimes you've got to watch those public shows really closely. Maybe programming your kids. I think the best thing to do is, after attending a Ren Fest, perhaps watch little Johnny very closely to make sure he's not out trying to whack the other kids' heads off in the neighborhood. This is Kilroy McFadden, and you've been listening to the What I Wish I Didn't Know Show. The What I Wish I Didn't Know Show is produced by the McFadden Group. Mixed and recorded and edited at I Am Sad Studios. I'd like to thank the Spankmeister for hosting me on his site. Be sure to catch his show every Sunday night at midnight. That's Central Time, silly. And never forget that none of this would be possible without Virtual One hosting us. Be sure to visit his website, vftp.net. Good night. What would this show be without its fuck-ups?